The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, from the removal of Nicolas Maduro from Venezuela, threats to take over Greenland either by purchase or by military force, and now telling Cuba to take a deal or else, which leaves a long list and all of us wondering who might be next. Lara Marlow, Paris-based journalist and author, has been writing about this in the Irish Times and joins us now. Good morning, Lara.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you have written, the head-spinning events of the past week indicate that either Trump is stark raving mad or his elevation to the US presidency was the greatest undercover coup in the history of Soviet and Russian intelligence. And really, it is kind of looking at things an either-or, isn't it?
Or both. I think both are possible. You'd have to be a little bit cracked to do the bidding of Vladimir Putin. The fact is, Trump has had very, very close relations with Moscow since 1987, when he went there for the first time. And when he came back to the U.S., he took out advertisements in all the major U.S. newspapers calling for an end to NATO, basically saying that Europeans were freeloaders and that this had to stop. And it's been his constant refrain ever since. But what's happened since January 3rd really takes the cake. I mean, you know, he lands troops and bombs Venezuela, kidnaps the president of Venezuela and his wife, and continues threatening, first of all, last week it was mainly Greenland, but now today it's Iran and Cuba. I mean, there's just no end to the things that Donald Trump thinks he can do. He thinks he can bully everyone into doing whatever he wants them to.
Now, he has declared himself acting president of Venezuela to add to his many other titles, be he chairman or president of this or that or the other. But he's frustrated in one way that the Nobel Peace Prize cannot be shared with him.
Well, actually, Maria Corina Machado, who won the Peace Prize, offered to share it with him, and he's not interested. He wants it for himself.
But also the Nobel people said, no, you cannot do that. You cannot share it. We are the ones who decide which is the recipient. So he's
exactly. And the allegation made by the Washington Post is that the reason he does not want her to return to Venezuela as president is that he is jealous and angry that she was given the Peace Prize instead of him.
Now, these are dark days in Europe. And now there should be a lesson learned from Munich in the run-up to the Second World War, that appeasement with a bully does not work. And yet, Europe appeases.
Absolutely. After he attacked Venezuela, there was only one European leader, and that's Pedro Sanchez of Spain, who actually even really criticized Trump for breaking international law and for kidnapping Maduro. The Europeans are scared of Trump. They're scared that he will use military force to seize Greenland, which is part of Denmark, which is a very loyal NATO ally. They're afraid that he will cut off Ukraine completely from U.S. intelligence information, which the Ukrainians need to defend themselves. And they think that he will just drop Ukraine, forget about trying to get a peace agreement with Russia, and also go back on very vague commitments to provide a sort of backstop, a guarantee to any peace agreement. The French and the British last week promised that they would send peacekeepers if an accord can be reached. And Trump has said he would provide a backstop, but there is no explanation whatsoever of that backstop is. And I think it's incredible that anyone believes that Donald Trump would keep his word, that this is a credible guarantee to begin with. The Europeans really have to wake up and realize that Donald Trump is not their friend. He said so very clearly in his national security strategy. The U.S. is now a potential adversary of Europe in the same way that Russia and China is. Europe is alone, and it has to stand up.
Europe has decided belatedly, perhaps, to rearm, to be able to defend itself. But if you look at the plain numbers of it, Europe as a bloc is bigger than the United States, is bigger than Russia. But Europe doesn't behave like as if it has that kind of weight of numbers.
No, it's an economic giant, but it's a political dwarf, and it has no organized defense ability to speak of. It's too divided. It can't agree on anything. And, you know, Trump gave Greenland 20 days to consent to being annexed by the United States of America. If the Europeans let this happen, they just become the vassals of Donald Trump. And one has the impression that the leaders just are ignoring this or that they're afraid. They should at the very least be drawing up a list of measures they could take to try to deter the U.S. from doing this, but they're silent.
Now, the consequences for Europe, should they take on Trump, and they can take him on. I mean, they could remove U.S. bases from European countries. They could target U.S. tech. They could do all of those things. But it looks like Europe wants a bit of cakeism, to have their cake and eat it. In other words, they don't want to inflict any suffering at all on the citizens, and therefore they appease Trump, lest he do something. But he's going to do it anyway.
Absolutely. And experience has shown that Trump eventually does tend to do what he says he's going to do. He's been after Greenland since his first term. And, you know, every time he goes quiet, people sort of heave a huge sigh of relief and he's harassing someone else for the moment or blackmailing someone else. But he always comes back to it. And even if he doesn't do it in 20 days, as he threatened to do, all it would take, frankly, is someone from the U.S. consulate in Nuuk, which is the capital of Greenland, to walk out the front door and plant a U.S. flag and say, I declare that Greenland is part of the U.S. And then what does the EU do?
Now, the question of whether or not Trump will ultimately face the enemy within, which he's always talking about, but that enemy within was not in any way organized. However, there are Republican voices now raised against certain of his attitudes and actions. So maybe that's where his demise will have to come from, because there's nobody in the world who'll actually bring it about otherwise.
Maybe. Certainly the Speaker of the House and the Speaker of the Senate, who are both Republicans, have opposed the idea of the annexation of Greenland. So one hopes that the Congress will stand up against Trump, but until now they've always caved in at the last minute because the Republicans know that without Trump, you know, they have no real leader. J.D. Vance isn't really an alternative leader. I mean, one hopes that he can be stopped. Would it be Republicans in U.S. Congress? It's not going to be the U.N. that would stop him. I doubt the Europeans are going to be able to stop him. It would take some kind of will or event from some unknown quarter, really, to stop him. But the fact is, like Putin, Trump will not stop until you stop him.
The history of Europe in this particular chapter is pretty shameful. When I think of Mark Rutte referring to Trump as daddy, when I think of Keir Starmer traipsing up to Scotland within his own jurisdiction to bend the knee at Trump on his golf course, I mean, how can these people look themselves in the mirror in the morning?
It's a good question, Pat. It is. And one despairs. I mean, a very interesting question for Ireland is, will the Taoiseach go to the Oval Office with his ball of shamrock on St. Patrick's Day?
No doubt he will. You know, he will take a view, and maybe this is the view they're all taking. After all, there's only 3 years to go.
We hope. Because if, you know, look at, you had ICE, these thugs from ICE. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Taoiseach can go to the Oval Office if Trump has seized Greenland in the meantime. I really don't see how he could do that.
Now, you've written in an article in the Irish Times about the dawn of a new manifest destiny. What is that?
These are the tech brawligarchy, the Silicon Valley billionaires. They want what they call freedom cities. In the U.S. and abroad, they've set up one in Belize. They're against all corporate regulations. Peter Thiel is one of the leaders of this. And they've also suggested that Greenland would be a great place to practice the colonization of Mars because it's so sparsely populated and so on. So they, too, are putting pressure on Trump to seize Greenland.
Now, can we go back to our starting point, is whether or not Trump is stark raving mad or whether he's a puppet of Putin, and you suggest he could be perhaps both. But going back to the genesis of all of that, when he went to Russia and was, if you like, converted to the Putin cause, is that about compromat? Is that about money? Because he is absolutely in thrall to wealth.
Yes. My hunch is that it's more about money than compromat. Compromat would be, for example, a video of Trump romping with prostitutes in a hotel room in Moscow or something. His fortune was really built on Russian money, Russians buying property, condominiums from Trump in Florida and New York. There's also a doctrine behind all this, which is this theory of spheres of influence. And Fiona Hill, who was Trump's Russia advisor, testified to a congressional commission in 2019 that the Russians wanted to swap Venezuela for Ukraine. Basically, the line was, Ukraine is our backyard, you're in it, we want you out, and Venezuela is your backyard, and we're happy to let you have that if you let us have Ukraine. And what we've seen in the last 8-9 days is basically that. The Russians, there was barely a peep out of the Russians over Maduro, who was their ally, you have to remember. Venezuela was the closest country to Russia in South America. So it looks like Trump has adopted Putin's ideology of spheres of influence. That means that Russia gets to take Europe. Basically, Trump gives it to them. China becomes the dominant power in Asia, and Trump takes the whole Western hemisphere. And when I say take, I mean literally take. He's already got several South American countries. He's got his allies, Javier Milei in Argentina. We kind of didn't notice because of the Christmas holidays, but in December, Chile and Honduras got new far-right-wing presidents supported by Trump. He also already has El Salvador. Now, the only sort of people who are standing out against Trump in Latin America are Lula in Brazil and Claudia Sheinbaum in Mexico, and he's got it in for them. There are elections later this year in Brazil, and you can be sure he'll be intervening there. He's also threatening Cuba. Right now, he's got two U.S. warships just north of Cuba, the Iwo Jima and the San Antonio, and he said on Truth Social at the weekend, there won't be any petrol or money for Cuba, zero. They should make a deal before it's too late. It's not clear what deal exactly he wants Cuba to make, but he's definitely threatening them as well.
He was also very casual about the number of Cubans who were protecting Maduro who were slaughtered by the United States forces. I mean, these political figures may feel they are very, very important, but the lives of ordinary grunts surrounding Maduro, Cuban grunts though they may have been, as well as Venezuelans, I mean, the casual way he dismissed their lives as being utterly unimportant.
It's they estimate about 80 people were killed in this raid to kidnap Maduro. And he's totally inconsistent in that when a U.S. demonstrator is killed by ICE or when U.S. special forces slaughter Venezuelans and Cubans, it doesn't matter. These are just collateral damage. And, you know, the soldiers and the ICE thugs are doing their job. But if he wants to make, you know, say Charlie Kirk is assassinated, something like that, then suddenly it is a very big deal. And the people who've done it are terrorists and so on. It's complete hypocrisy and double standards.
I wonder, would a generation today enjoy Charlie Chaplin's movie, The Great Dictator, which really is all about a Trump-like figure?
Absolutely. If you accept that Charlie Chaplin was very slightly built and diminutive and graceful, whereas there's a wonderful scene where he's dancing balancing the globe on his fingertip. One can't imagine Trump doing something like that. I know there's a wonderful French play called Ubu Roi by Alfred Jarry. About a mad king who he says, à la trappe, you know, open the trap door, and all of his opponents fall through the trap door. And that was performed recently in Dublin. So I think that certainly in the arts, it's time for satire against mad kings.
I'm going to play a clip later on in the program of a 1941 movie, which is very prescient of what happens when you put someone like Trump in the White House. We'll do that a little bit later on in the program. But for the moment, Lara Marlowe, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.